The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Well, let's turn firstly to the dramatic international developments overnight and the impact it's all having here with the fuel protests continuing around the country. So if the Strait of Hormuz is reopened, there will be a 2-week ceasefire. The US President Donald Trump will claim success, while Iran is also portraying this as a victory for the regime. Let's speak firstly to Channel 4 presenter Matt Fry. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Claire.
Now, the war has cost America $1 billion a day. What was that for, do you think?
To get back to a place where the Strait of Hormuz is not as open as it was before the war started. To have one chap called Khamenei running a country, and now you've got his Nepo Ayatollah son, the younger Khamenei, running the country nominally, although we haven't seen him or heard him. Potentially a regime that is, although bloodied and bruised, missing quite a few missiles, you know, maybe not able to find its enriched uranium, certainly materially weaker, it is more emboldened and it's sort of high on the story of its own victory as the David against America's Goliath. And, you know, this really matters. And I think it shows you once again that Donald Trump, the businessman, the master of the deal, the author or supposed author of the art of the deal, sees everything in a very transactional way and is not able to see the other side's arguments, you know, the importance of resilience, of pride, of legacy, of history. So when you say to the proud Iranians, once Persians, we're going to bomb you back to the Stone Age, we're going to obliterate your civilization, you know, you're going to turn people who hate the Ayatollahs into people who hate the Ayatollahs not as much as they hate you, Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but depending on what you thought about Donald Trump yesterday, he is either the strong man of the world who has succeeded in getting the strait reopened, or he has blinked. And while he blinked, he upended the world economy, left, as you say, a revenge-hungry regime in place in Iran. Now, what will the story, will history write on this? Or do you think it's already written in that people are saying he needed his off-ramp so badly that he has accepted terms that are astonishing from Iran to get these talks started?
Well, I think history is being rewritten every single day here. I mean, it's rewritten on Twitter probably every single minute. And let's see where we end up in a year's time. But I certainly, if you just take history as a chunk of time, the last 6 weeks, it is very difficult to see what all that American money and all those people who've been killed in Iran, it's almost 2,000, most of them civilians. I mean, we don't know how many people have died in the, you know, in the military or in the IGRC, but it's not sure what that has achieved, frankly. Has it made Iran any weaker? Well, if they have the ability to make money now by turning the Strait of Hormuz into a toll booth, which is extraordinary and something that seems to have been agreed to by the Americans, they can make, you know, as some people calculate, as much as 80, 90 billion US dollars a year. That's an awful lot of money for them. They were able to rebuild some of their missile stock very rapidly after the June war last year. Who's to say they won't be able to do that again? You know, if they, especially if they make this money and if they're allowed to export their oil without sanctions. I mean, think about it. They're, you know, they're in a better place than they were before. Yes, they're missing bridges and a few power plants and, you know, and a lot of their leadership has been killed. But what Trump didn't realize is that these are institutions that he's taking on, not just individuals. And because he's such an egomaniac and it's all about him, he probably imagines that if he was killed, American democracy would just crumble. The republic would disappear down the plug hole, which obviously is not true. In the same way that he thought that if he killed Khamenei, the regime there would collapse. And of course, he hadn't even learned the lessons of his own history because he did abduct the president of Venezuela, who was a bad hombre, as Trump would say. But the regime has not just been changed, it's been rebooted. I mean, they're still in charge. You know, they're doing exactly what they did before, except that they're doing deals with American oil companies now.
Yeah. And then the other question is, what happens with Israel and the attacks on Hezbollah in South Lebanon? Are they likely to continue?
Well, there was a bit of confusion there. I mean, in the first ceasefire agreement, in the 10-point plan, it states very clearly that all of Iran's proxies around the region would disarm, or they would, you know, stop fighting Israel and so on, but also states that there would be, that the attacks on them would cease. And the Israelis seem to have signed up to that in the middle of the night. And then suddenly we get a statement this morning from the Prime Minister's office saying, well, actually, no. On second thoughts, we're going to carry on with our war against Hezbollah in southern Lebanon because for us, this is existential. Yes, yes, yes. But they're going to carry on fighting. So poor old Lebanon is in a bracket of its own to be subjected to even more misery.
Mm-hmm. And then politically for Donald Trump in the States, we have him, J.D. Vance, his acolytes, Pete Hegseth and so on. These people who said, who were elected on the promise that there would be no more foreign wars for the States, so they wouldn't be paying $1 billion a day to attack anybody. They're facing the midterms, the Republican Party, the midterms now in November. How is this likely to play for them?
Well, I think it depends what happens to the price of oil and therefore the price of petrol. I think if the price of petrol, which is clearly too high at the moment for the American commuter, and it's extraordinary to think that the ultimate guardrail to preventing World War III is the American commuter in their gas-guzzling SUV, but be that as it may, if the price goes down, you know, and people have short memories and they move on to the next thing, it's quite possible that by the time you get to the midterm elections, that Trump's opinion poll ratings freefall would have been contained. That still doesn't mean he's going to win the House. The Republicans look as if they will lose. They looked as if they were going to lose the House even before this war. But remember, their majority is incredibly slim. But at the result of this war, it looked as if they might even lose the Senate. Now, that would make the big difference, because if you lose the Senate, then, you know, the other side, the Democrats, would be in a very strong position to really hold his feet to the fire, which is something obviously he doesn't want. Impeachment is fine. I mean, he's survived several of those already. That's literally just, impeachment just means that you've been indicted. But to be convicted, you need a 60 majority in the, you need 60 votes in the Senate, which obviously the Democrats don't have and the Republicans don't have at the moment either.
Yeah, I have a listener here telling us in a message that the world is a safer place today. And I would love to ask that person how and why anyone would think that.
No, I think that's just not true. I mean, what has been destroyed, apart from bridges and power plants and oil refineries and all that stuff, what has been destroyed is trust in America. However faulty that trust might have been in the past, the Iranians think that America's word is not as good as America claims, and they can say that because twice when there have been negotiations in the past, America has broken off those negotiations with bombs. Secondly, the Gulf Arab states that thought they were Trump's best friends, America's best friends, were not consulted about this war that they did not want. They weren't consulted about the kicking of the hornet's nest and the hornets flying around like crazy, bombing them. I wouldn't be surprised if those billions and billions and billions of dollars that Trump likes to say, of Saudi money, for instance, that were promised to be invested in the American economy will now suddenly, miraculously, quietly disappear. Mm-hmm. Because what I've been hearing from the people I've been speaking to in the Gulf states is that, yes, they really don't like Iran for having bombed them, but this would not have happened if America hadn't started the war. They no longer trust America. And by the way, forget any deal between Saudi Arabia and Israel. I can't imagine that happening. And then, of course, you've got the European allies of America. We've been humiliated. We've had our nose rubbed in the dirt. You know, he's insulted our prime minister. He's insulted the French president. He's insulted the German chancellor. And by the way, he did start the year by threatening Greenland militarily. Who's to say he won't do that again to try and extract some kind of deal?
Mm-hmm.
And who's to say that we can get back to a position where NATO actually functions as a defensive alliance based on trust? And we haven't even talked about the repercussions that this new environment has on Vladimir Putin in Russia, who's feels completely justified now in bombing the hell out of Kyiv, even more than he's done so for the last 4 years. Or Xi Jinping, for that matter, should he feel that his army and navy are up to it, which they may not be, that it's his time to take a shot at the island of Taiwan. So we are in a brave and rather unpleasant new world where might is right and might can also be rather incompetent.
Matt, it is extraordinary. Thank you so much for your time. Matt Fry there, Channel 4 presenter. We're going to bring you up to date with what is happening with the fuel protests in Dublin, but also right around the country. That's coming up in a moment. But I want to speak now to Danny Hewson, who is head of financial analysis at AJ Bell, because, of course, all of this, we will be looking closely at the cost of oil, the cost of crude oil, and how quickly that will be passed on at the pump. And this is all dependent on whether the Strait of Hormuz is reopened and traffic is flowing freely through it. So, Danny, what is the latest on that? What are you hearing?
So at the moment, what we're seeing in terms of the oil price is the price of a barrel of Brent crude, which is seen as the global benchmark, is down almost 14% this morning to just over $94 a barrel. Interestingly enough, West Texas Intermediate, which is US oil, which normally trades below Brent, has been trading at a premium for the last week or so. It is still trading at a premium, which suggests some oil traders are still very nervous about whether or not this ceasefire will hold and whether or not we will see shipments of oil, gas, fertilizer, all that kind of stuff coming through the Strait of Hormuz. Now, what I've seen this morning is there is a nice bit of kit where you can take a look at the vessels in and around the Strait of Hormuz, and you can see what's moving and what isn't. And there has been some significant movement this morning. So it looks like a lot of ships are getting ready to take advantage of the ceasefire if they can actually get in and out of the Strait. But of course, the big question is, what next? What after this 14-day ceasefire, if the 14-day ceasefire does hold? And we'll get to about day 10. And that, of course, is when these big shipping companies will start to consider whether or not they should be sending vessels through the Strait. And add to that, you were just hearing from Matt that it looks like people are going to have to pay a tariff in order to go through the Strait. So effectively a toll on being able to use the Strait to get shipments to and from where they need to go.
And if Matt is right, and the Iranians think that they're going to raise between $80 and $90 billion a year from that tariff, that is not going to be an insignificant cost for the oil companies, and we'll end up paying for that.
We absolutely will, although, of course, it will be mitigated slightly by the fact that if those tolls are paid, which gives safe passage to those ships, it should then bring down the cost of insurance on those ships, which have shot up as companies have sought to protect the cargoes. Look, when you're talking about the massive values associated with some of these shipments of oil, the fact that getting to the point of paying a toll, but then being able to ship it to where it needs to go, that is going to be something which many of these big companies will stomach. But it will, of course, impact us, the consumer, when we get to the pump. It is likely that if this oil price fall continues, if it remains lower than $100 a barrel, we should start to see an impact at the pump within days, potentially weeks, but that could just as soon disappear, of course, if this ceasefire comes to an end. And we aren't expecting it to get back to where we were, because, of course, in December, we were talking about $60 a barrel for Brent crude. The big question mark is how much infrastructure has been damaged, and, of course, how much is Iran going to charge people to use the Straits, this toll that we were just talking about.
Now, you mentioned that people might see a reduction at the pump within days or weeks, and immediately you'll have people saying, well, when the price went up, I saw the increase within the hour. So why the disparity?
The disparity comes because, of course, of the uncertainty and volatility of the oil markets at the moment. So we saw the prices shoot up and remain elevated. We've seen the price come down, but there is a question mark about how long the price will stay down, because when people are buying oil, of course, they're buying future oil and they're buying the ability to actually get that stuff to where it needs to go. That's one of the reasons that American oil is still trading at a premium, because I think there are still question marks about whether or not that oil is going to land where it needs to go and the delays associated with it. So the answer is it just takes a bit of time. And because of the volatility, it may be that any hoped for price decreases looking at the price of a barrel of oil today might actually not come through.
Mm-hmm. And the insurance premium, you're saying, is holding the price up at the moment, along with the uncertainty as people wait to see how this plays out over the coming days.
The insurance premium will certainly be a part of that. But the biggest issue is whether or not this oil will actually make it from the Strait to where it needs to go. Add to that the fact that there have been delays, of course. There has been a period of time when about 20% of the world's oil has not been able to get where it needed to go. So people are paying more for their oil at the moment. And a lot of places need more oil to come in to be able to reopen their factories where they've put in things like four-day weeks to be able to fly planes. We know there has been a shortage of jet fuel, which of course then is forcing some companies to cut the number of routes that they're expecting to service over the coming weeks. So it's down to supply and demand. Ultimately, people want the oil, and it is still not arriving in the kind of amounts that we need. And even when the strait hopefully is open, it does take time for that to come through.
Danny Hewson from AJ Bell, thank you very much for bringing us that analysis. And later on in the programme, a reminder that we will be speaking to the Iranian ambassador designate to Ireland, who will be joining me here in the studio for reaction to what has been happening.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.